This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 558. This is our membership drive. I am Lisa Sheps, along with my co-host Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You are listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. And this streams live, as it often does, at koop.org. Do not go away.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
With this ring. It is Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. On the show today, we have King Productions and their show, Travisville. And this is our spring membership drive, so we're going to be telling you all the wonderful things that you can learn about co-op. And we will also be having conversations about the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, Atlanta, and Denver, Colorado. Stick with us.
With this ring goes nothing but me.
With this ring, there's nothing but me.
That made me happy.
It's a happy song.
I just said I wanted to frolic through the Texas wildflowers.
So how familiar are you with the show Sherry! Exclamation point.
Not very.
It's written by one James Lipton.
I know.
We'll talk about that later. But first things first, before we do anything else, this is our spring membership drive. And not only are we here with you and me, we are so fortunate to be joined by Miss Pearl.
That's what we call lucky gals.
I know. Oh my God. Because we have not been on the show together before, have we?
I know.
This is fun.
I'm so excited.
Why the heck are you here?
I'm a huge fan of this show. Huge fan of this show. I listen to it all the time.
Awesome. I love that about
you. I'm here because it's membership drive.
And we listen to Miss Pearl's General Store.
I was just about to say, we listen to you too.
General Store is great. I wish I had my little ding ding thing.
I know. The bell. Yeah. The doorbell. You have lots of guests too. You need a doorbell as well. It's a revolving door of theater.
Well, Lisa, you need to add a doorbell to the to our sound effect.
I do, but I do have this one.
I see you have guests.
No, nobody could hear it because it's a small dog barking.
It's a rare occasion when you don't have a guest.
That's true.
I know, you juggle a lot.
So, I do.
Yeah, it's membership driving.
And you know what else I juggle? I juggle telephone numbers.
512-472-5667. That's 512-472-KOOP or online at koop.org. Great way to give. We've just moved into from the music portion to the, as we call it, news and public affairs
NPA.
Portion of our
I'm an
Wednesday.
NPA.
And I know some of you are just waiting to get behind the great news
Your
and public
voice.
Affairs programming
Speak
here at
very,
Co-op. Very loudly
favorites.
That you're supporting Co-op Radio. 512-472-5667.
Awesome. Thank you. Let me introduce the folks that are here with us today. These are all the folks from King Productions' production of Travisville. So let me see if I can butcher some names. Hold on, I gotta find my sheet first. We have Bill Newchurch. Hi, Bill.
That's me.
That's you. We have Courtney Williams.
That's me.
We have Mike Dellens.
Hello, Lisa.
And welcoming back Andrew Goldberg.
Hello.
Okay, one of the things I have to coach you guys on, because I noticed this before, I asked a question, and I forgot it was, but a lot of you nodded or shook your head. Doesn't work on the radio. I'm just telling you. So we have some rests in peace that we were going to talk about, and one of those is James Lipton passed away.
I know.
He was 93 years old.
Yeah, that I was like, wait, really? But I guess I knew. I guess I just was like, oh, wait, huh?
Yeah, old. But he has a very interesting, he had an interesting, very interesting life. Sorry, I'm looking at my, oh, there it is. A very interesting life, but he has an IDBB, oh my gosh, IDBB, I can't even say it anymore. IBDB page.
Yes, there you go.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, how many, this is a question for anybody, James Lipton, born in 1923, how many Broadway shows did he do in his lifetime? Anybody? Anybody? It's a number, so you could always guess.
Six.
Six. Nicole, do you have a guess?
I know, so I'm not going to play the game.
20.
20. Could be 26. It's 5. Which I was about 5 more than I thought.
Oh, really? You didn't know that?
No, I did know that. I remember I did remember after I heard it.
It was
I went, oh yeah. So he wrote the book and lyrics to 2 musicals. Both of them flops. One of them closed after 3 or 4 performances. And that one was Nowhere to Go But Up. And then the one you heard a little bit music from was Sherry, which is The Man Who Comes to Dinner musical.
Isn't that funny?
Oh. Yeah. It did a little bit, but I think it ran for like 50 or 60 performances. Nowhere to Go But Up was in 1962. Sherry was in 1967. And then he produced 2 shows. One, The Mighty Gents. And then he did Monteith and Rand, who I haven't heard their name in a long, long time.
No.
And then he was a performer in 1951 on The Autumn Garden.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So he died
man.
Of bladder cancer. And so most people know him from Inside the Actor's Studio. And his obituary, which is very interesting, sort of tells how that all happened and how he started working. I did not realize that the Actor's Studio, he came in to run the Actor's Studio, and this was a marketing ploy to try to get it up. And when we all knew it from the television interview show, it was part of New School, but it started out as part of NYU for the first couple of years.
And then it went to New School.
It was free.
It was free. And then it wasn't free because I took the class for 2 years and it was not free anymore. And it was at the New School then. It was like right on 12th Street right there in the little studio to record. I saw some really cool stuff. He was an interesting man.
Yes.
He was an interesting man. And I had forgotten about taking that class. I had forgotten about that time of my life. I've forgotten the people that I saw. And it's brought up a lot of conversation in the last 2 years.
Yep.
So last 2 days, sorry.
He
interviewed, felt like 2 years, though.
About 275 different performers.
Well, I probably saw about like 12.
Okay, well, that's less than 275.
Yeah, nowhere near that. But I had some good ones.
So the Inside the Actor's Studio is usually, it was an hour show. So you know this, so don't say anything.
How wasn't long an hour there.
Do you think it took? How long of an interview did he? How long did he interview these people to then cut it down to an hour? Anybody?
Trivia time.
This is what.
Let's say an hour and a half.
Hour and a half. Anybody else?
4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, you win. 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, and sometimes when someone like Steven Spielberg is there, and the repertoire is so long, 4 hours in, we had only gotten to Jaws.
Bum, 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 bum.
I left. I went home. I was like, I can't stay till 3 o'clock in the morning. I stayed a little. I got to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
So at the end of the interview, he always asked wacky little questions. And so once he allowed himself to be interviewed, and I'm going to read it to you because it actually ends the obituary.
Is it the Dave Chappelle interview one?
No, this is they're interviewing him.
Is this
right when Dave Chappelle asked him the question?
It doesn't say.
Oh.
When you say the question, I'll probably let you know if it is.
Okay. Well, he only did it once. So if Dave Chappelle did it, it would have to be him.
I would believe so then.
But it's not apropos to the story, but there you go. We like Dave Chappelle. All right, so.
It's fun facts to know.
What is your favorite curse word? His favorite curse word is Jesus Christ. What is the profession you wouldn't have wanted to practice? Executioner. And this is my favorite. If God exists, what would you like to hear him say after your death? And he says, you see, Jim, you were wrong. I exist. But you come on in anyway. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. I watched it. Someone played a montage to him and then ended with that clip at the end. And I was like, that was so great to put that in there.
Yeah. So we also lost one other person. Actually, we lost him a while ago. We lost him on February 20th, but he just came. His obituary was published on the 28th. Gerald Crone, he was one of the founding members of the Negro Ensemble Company, which I did not know this. He died of Parkinson's disease. But it was started by 3 people. Him, hold on, where are the other names? Douglas Turner Ward and Robert Hooks. And he was white. I did not know. And they actually took a lot of heat for having a white person as part of this really groundbreaking company that that started in 1967. And Douglas Turner Ward, one of the other founders, said, "We were damned for not being in Harlem. And we were accused of conspiring against black playwrights, judged traitors for hiring a few white people, and stigmatized with a host of other mortal and venial sins, negating our right to be called a black theater. But they still exist. They've been working since when I lived in New York. We all knew about the Negro Ensemble Theater Company. And they had three shows that went to Broadway: The River Niger, 1973, The First Breeze of Summer in 1975, and Home in 1980. And of course, in 1981, we just talked about this recently, they staged the off-Broadway production of A Soldier's Play.
Mm-hmm. We were just talking about that recently because of the revival.
Yeah. So
Blair Underwood.
Yeah. So it's interesting how they got started. They were started doing the work featuring black playwrights, black actors. And then it sounds to me like when you read this, that the Ford Foundation came to them saying, "We want to give you a $1.5 million grant." And they said, "Okay."
I believe you are correct on that one. That's what I got.
And they got the grant. It kept them open for a while. They said it financed a company of 13 actors, workshops, and a four-play season for the first year. And then evidently they didn't try to get much more money after that because they went into financial hardship after that. But they still exist. They're still around.
Yeah, they still
exist.
They've definitely left a mark and a stamp. Yep. And legacy of theater in general. And
yep. He was 86 years old. And one last thing, we had the production of The Unsinkable Molly Brown that opened.
Which we talked a hair a bit. We talked
Broadway.
Yeah, we talked a bit about like getting excited.
No, we talked about
the pre-buzzy.
Yes, we talked about pre-buzzy, and it was reviewed by the Times for the Times by Elizabeth Vincentelli, and she did not like it.
I was about to say I didn't think she was a fan, from what I gathered.
Yeah. She called the production simultaneously busy and lifeless. And they said Molly Brown
was... How is something busy and lifeless? So there you go.
There you go. Well, they said that Molly Brown was just one level. And this was the... it was rewritten by Dick Scanlon, who was the book writer and lyricist, along with Kathleen Marshall, who decided to do it. And they said that the characters from 1960... are not the characters from 2020. They're very different. Molly Brown is evidently, according to Vincentelli, like a one-level crazy dynamo.
Which is so not
with all
Molly
the
Brown.
Subtlety of a Hummer, she said.
Oh. Well, yeah. I mean, Hummers went back into production, they announced, so...
What?
Yeah, look at it. Look at it from the bright side that
there
way.
There you go.
There you go.
Some of us didn't even know it went out of production.
It did for years, yeah. But they just for the public. But they just announced it about 2 months ago.
That seems like a step backwards.
So
that seems like a step backwards.
You know,
bring the Hummer back.
Oh yes,
yeah. I'm with you on that.
Let's burn some more gasoline.
I'm just letting you know.
Yeah. So we talked last week and we played a little bit of Beth Malone singing I Ain't Down Yet. And Vincentelli says, although Malone almost never leaves the stage, she is not given much to work with, either by Scanlon or Marshall, and compensates with an unbridled, I'm auditioning for Peter Pan enthusiasm.
Oh, no.
I know.
No.
Anyway,
no.
This is produced by the Transport Group, and it runs through the 22nd at the Abrams Arts Center in Manhattan, if you want to see it. But it doesn't sound like we do. But I have very fond memories. My father sang that song all the time because it was one that he saw it with Tammy Grimes in 1960.
Yeah, my Gigi. She loved it.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. I want to learn to read and write.
I'm with you.
Yep. Okay. So we actually now have Heather Ross joining us here today. Hi, Heather.
Yes, we do. I get to share the mic.
Miss Pearl is closing up the store for now, I guess. Well, we're going to say goodbye to my audience.
I was so happy to be here, just for mere moments. But
we'd
I'll be
love
tuning
to have
in.
You here. Come back again.
See you later. 512-472-5667. Please support this great, great, great program. It's so outstanding. 512-472-KOOP.
So, Heather Ross.
Yes, ma'am.
Why? Tell us about the membership drive. This is our spring membership drive.
Yes, it's our spring membership drive, and we are raising money to keep the station going.
Well, give folks the telephone number one more time, Heather.
512-472-5667. Y'all are looking around. It's behind you right there, if you ever want to say it. We hope you do. It's also right here for me. 512-472-KOOP.
Awesome. Well, let's take a little moment and talk to the folks about why they're actually here.
We call the people in the studio.
What?
They're the people in the studio.
They're the people in the studio, yes.
I was just, you know, making a fun little title.
It's the people in the studio.
It's the people in the studio.
So these, everybody here is part of King Productions production of Travisville by William Jackson Harper, who is Cheaty.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Yeah.
So do you not watch, do you watch The Good Place?
No.
Nicole? Ugh, love Cheaty.
So good.
Okay.
I've seen episodes, so I feel like I should know that, but I don't.
We have the director here, Andrew Goldberg.
Hello.
Hello. And then we have three of the actors. We have Mike Dellens.
Hello.
Courtney Williams.
Hello.
And Bill Newchurch.
Hello.
So, Andrew, tell us about the show. What is it?
Well, the show is about gentrification. It's set in Texas in 1964. The location is not specific, but the story is very similar to what happened around the fairgrounds in Dallas. It's very similar to what happened with Sharpstown in Houston. It's very similar to what happens with massive redevelopment projects that displace old neighborhoods. It's been going on for a long time.
Uh-huh.
You know, those that
get yourself right up on that microphone. Sorry.
Those that have the money and the power to do the redevelopment tend to be pretty inconsiderate of those they want to displace to build their new malls. And I think the play does a pretty good job of presenting a snapshot of those kind of events, and it does take place shortly after the Kennedy assassination.
Okay.
At a time when people frequently got shot for standing up for the little guy.
Right.
So I think that adds a lot of tension.
Okay, and so Mike, tell us about your character. What do you play?
Well, I'm the inconsiderate developer that Andrew is talking about.
Great.
And so I am trying to build a new development, and the development is called Travisville. And I'm hoping to displace a pretty big part of the neighborhood.
Okay. Consciously trying to do that.
Yes.
Okay, explicitly. Yes. Awesome. Courtney, what do you play?
I play the role of Reverend Ora Fletcher.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of connected to everybody in the play. I'm the assistant pastor at New Mount Olive there in the community, and I am being groomed and mentored to take over for Elder Hurst, who is elderly and also dealing with some health issues.
Uh-huh.
And with that being part of my role, being mentored, I'm kind of connected to the city, connected to the mayor. I'm connected to everybody and how I want to balance relations with everyone. And so throughout the play, I'm trying to figure out how do I do this and still make everyone happy and at the same time still hold on to my integrity.
Okay, and I'm just going to take a wild guess that, Bill, I think you playing the mayor.
I played the mayor.
I was a wild stab.
Somewhere there's got to be an old white guy in the show.
Hey, wait, I'm an old white guy.
Well, that's true. But he's I think of him as a liberal and progressive for his time because he has black political allies. He's very concerned about black people being safe in his town. This is at a time where black people weren't safe in a lot of places in the South. Just a few months before the Civil Rights Act had been passed, and just a few months before that, civil rights workers were murdered in Mississippi. So,
sure.
Relatively speaking, he's a decent guy. He's flawed.
Yeah. So this is a fictional account of the story, but are you modeling your characters after any of living or any historical figures from the civil rights era, or are we just making our own characters from scratch?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Compilation?
Yeah. I mean, my character kind of evolves and changes throughout, so I couldn't just mirror it on one particular person. But different portions of the play I'm kind of modeling maybe after how Martin Luther King would have approached something.
Sure.
And then later on how Malcolm X would have approached something. Mm-hmm. And so you get different dynamics as my character changes throughout the
Right, because it does, as I read the description, I have not seen the show, but it goes from a sort of a good relationship between the communities of color and the government to not so good. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Do we have a, or can you even tell me, do we get a happy ending? Whatever that may mean to whomever.
I wouldn't say the ending is happy. I would say there's a lot of ambiguity in the play. And I think that's one of its real strengths, that there are no clear answers to anything. So there is we won't quite spoil the answer, but let's say that there's a conflict that's been simmering below the surface that finally boils to the surface at the end.
Well, I know there are a lot of shows that deal with racism and bigotry. When you get right down to it, we're really trying to, in many cases, teach our audience a lesson. We're trying to impart some sort of good thing to our audience. Does this play do that, Andrew?
I would describe it as more of a journalistic style.
Okay.
If it has a lesson, the lesson it teaches is these are real people. They're fictional characters, of course, but they represent real people. And they really went through things like this, and they're still going through things like this. And in this play, it's there are black folks and white folks, but throughout human history, this stuff goes on all the time, everywhere, wherever there's power, you know. And so to me, if there's a lesson, the lesson is just awareness. The lesson is these are real human lives. These are real human people. This stuff really goes on. Are we making good decisions when these things happen? Or are we getting carried away with the illusions in our head about what we have to maintain and what we have to do to save face or to get along? And maybe sometimes we back down from the fights that we really need to fight.
Right.
It's like think tank theater.
Triple T. Yeah. Well, that's great. So hold that thought. We're going to take a little break. We're going to talk a little bit more about Membership Driver and come back to you guys and talk more about Travisville. So Heather, I understand we have some people to thank.
We do. We have some very generous donors.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa
Rob
and Nicole.
And he's going to be taking
I'm here.
Over.
And Heather, who's not near a microphone.
She's Wait, here she comes. Out.
There you go. And my cadre of wonderful guests.
We're here.
It's the people in the studio.
With the people in the studio. Courtney, I'm going to give you a job. Can you please give me a number between 2 and 53?
45.
Okay, let's see what you've chosen. Oh, you chose the
Law and Order.
The Law and Order theme. I pushed the wrong button. Sorry, I've got a whole bunch of stuff on my thing. I can't remember. Where are my legal IDs? I know you're here somewhere. Here it is.
Hello there. This is John O'Hurley, Jay Peterman. You're listening to Lisa and Nicole Offstage and on the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
Jay Peterman. When Jay I was Peterman. Testing it out earlier today, it was Lillian Montevecchi.
Aww.
So stand by, listeners. In 3 weeks, you may hear Lisa Lampanelli's and her legal
right.
ID.
That's right.
So
that's Liz's birthday, too.
And it is Liz's birthday.
Speaking of
we love happy Liz. Birthday to you, Liz. Now, I'm going to sing you my song when it's your birthday. Not now.
No, wait.
So back to Travisville. What is Travisville? Is that a city?
It's
Travisville's the development.
I say that again. Your microphone wasn't on. I don't know why. I'm going to fire the engineer.
Are you having that discussion with yourself right now?
Travisville is the name of the development.
Uh-huh. Okay. So,
and one of my lines is it has its own unique street signs.
Oh.
No.
Like
what?
Yeah, you guys all gave us like...
You'll have to come to the show.
they're designed
Lisa.
By local artist Luis Aranha.
Oh, I love Luis Aranha.
That makes up for displacing hundreds of families.
Oh, I see. I get it. Yeah, we justify things as best we can. So this show has already opened, correct?
Yes.
How's it going?
Audiences been reacting?
They've been reacting really well. The Sunday crowd was really crazy. They really enjoyed it. I say crazy in a good way. They were engaged. It was almost like being, you know, in an interactive theater kind of deal. So it was really good.
Well, and I think, you know, I think something you guys can really back up for us is, you know, I've described it as journalistic and it talks about these really serious events, but this is hilarious. It's a hilarious play. It's not a comedy, but it has a lot of very real human moments that are just bust out laughter. They're just really funny. I mean, these folks are just trying to get through their lives, and there are a lot of really well-written funny moments. It's a really
nutritive
fun experience.
I love that. Is it nutritive for the youngsters? Can I bring my kids?
Oh yeah, probably what is the age range?
Probably not.
PG-13? It's got some pretty rough language. It's definitely rated R for language.
R for language.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely has some language. My kids were there though, and they actually enjoyed it. But you know, the language wasn't too much of a deterrent. So
it would be up to the parents. So maybe PG-13 if you're okay with your kids hearing some language, it might be okay to go to. Awesome. And y'all are playing at Imagine Art over on Real Street.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of things. The Tilt Performance Group just had a show there. So they've been doing lots of shows there.
They did. And there are other groups who are rehearsing there. So it's pretty active place. There's a lot going on there right now.
Great. So how long do you play? When does it close?
We have March 8th. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this weekend.
Okay, so you close on March 8th. Mm-hmm. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
The email address is kingproductionsatx@gmail.com.
Right.
You can get tickets at Brown Paper Tickets. And the phone number is 1-800-838-3006.
And I'll tell you, I find the easiest way to do it is just search Facebook for Travisville or King Productions.
That's
and you will get
idea.
There. Well, great. Thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you all for coming.
Feel free to stick around if you want to join the fun for the rest of the show. We're going to talk about some local stuff. Other than that, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. That was Andrew Goldberg, Mike Dellens, Courtney Williams, and Bill Newchurch of King Productions, Travisville by William Jackson Harper, playing now through March 8th at Imagine Art on Real. For more information, you may search Facebook for Travisville. We will be right back.
Walking through the world, things happen right before your eyes. Things happen.
So, no, yesterday I was actually on the telephones, and a woman named Abby called, and at the end of the call, this is what I said.
Thank you, Abby. That was so helpful.
She acknowledges her exit applause.
What lovely knickers you have on.
I didn't really understand why she said the knickers thing, but it seemed to be nice.
She was just having some conversation with you.
Well, great. Again, 512-472-5667. We're going to now switch into our local section right now. And it's interesting, Heather, that you're here right now, because one of the things that we're going to talk about is your project for V-Day Austin. And you emailed me and said, could you be on the show? And I said, no, we're all booked up. But here you are.
It so, just kind of worked out.
Voila.
So tell folks about the Vagina Monologues production you're doing.
So I'm directing for the third time, or 3 years in a row, the Vagina Monologues. And during the time where everybody's doing this show worldwide to raise money for organizations that are working to end violence against women and children. So all the proceeds will go to the Refugee Services of Texas. That's our chosen organization. And it's going to be at the Santa Cruz Theater this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evening.
Awesome. Where can they go to get information about it?
You can go online, and you can also check Santa Cruz Theater's website, and they will be able to direct you to tickets.
Great. Again, I found it pretty easily by typing in the Vagina Monologues Austin on Facebook, and it popped right up.
Yes, and we're sharing it everywhere. We will also have concessions, and we're just going to it's the cast of entirely women, a diverse group of women, and the production team is all women. So it's a bunch of women talking about vaginas.
Yeah. V-Day and V-Day Austin has been around for at least 15 years right now.
It's 20-something years.
Right. Now. We used to do it at my old theater, and we're really, really happy it's going on. So please support the really, really important work, and you get to be entertained by the Vagina Monologues, which is a wonderful piece.
We will also have a live auction to help raise money as well. Some ceramics, I've contributed that, paintings.
Awesome.
All kinds of things.
Wonderful. And again, search for V-Day Austin or the Vagina Monologues Austin on Facebook. You can get information. I also want to talk about Alabaster by Shrewds Productions. That's by Audrey Cephaly. It's a rolling world premiere that's done by the National New Play Network, of which the Shrewds have a really good relationship. It's directed by Rudy Ramirez.
They like to do that. I know.
They do. Ground Floor Theater is going to join.
Made me excited. You heard it here first.
So it's a play about a noted photographer sets out to explore the topography of scars. Her journey lands her in a mysterious realm of undiscovered folk artist hiding away on a small farm in North Alabama. It's an intimate portrait that explores the meaning and purpose of art and the struggle of the lost and tortured souls that seek to create it.
That is totally, I have a totally different description. I just think that's so crazy. They're so different.
Well,
everywhere.
You probably have 3 years after the tornado wiped out her entire family.
Nope.
Oh, because it's interesting. We pulled it from the same place.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, that's why I was like Twilight Zone.
Anyway, so it's playing now through March 7th. So it's the last week. Through March 7th at the Dougherty Arts Center. For more information, search for Alabaster, Shrewd Productions. I think it's shrewdproductions.com.
So shrewdproductions.org.
Shrewdproductions.org. Now it's time for Today in Theater History. This is where
what
we learned.
What happened, Lisa?
Lots of stuff.
What happened?
Yeah, Bill remembers this. In 1922.
I do remember that.
Actually, I don't know this. This is a play called The First Man. Guess who wrote it? Anybody?
Adam?
Yes. Eugene O'Neill. I had never heard of this show.
Really?
It describes the strange tale of a scientist who curses the unborn child in his wife's womb.
Oh.
Yes. The wife dies in childbirth, and the child thrives. It only ran for 27 performances at the Neighborhood Playhouse in 1922.
Oh, it sounds so uplifting.
I know. In 1933, Jimmy Durante and Lupe Velez starred in a musical review called Strike Me Pink at the Majestic. It had music and lyrics by Len Brown is here at the radio station, or used to be, and Ray Henderson. And then 3 years after that, there's a film with Eddie Cantor and Ethel Merman.
Okay, I was like, I feel like there's a film with the Ethel.
There is.
There is, okay.
And then there's a show called The Vortex by Noel Coward.
Ah, I knew about that.
And it was revived. It's a revival in 1952, starring Adrian Allen and Isabel Jean. 1993, and I remember when this opened, The Goodbye Girl, which is the Neil Simon play and movie. And this was done by Marvin Hamlisch and David Zappel. Mm-hmm. And it starred Martin Short and Bernadette Peters.
I saw that.
Did you see the show?
I surely did.
You did? I did not.
Yes. I'm obsessed with the Bernadette. I haven't really... I think I maybe missed two things maybe she's
well, so then you also then saw Annie Get Your Gun.
I did.
6 years later at the same theater.
I did.
Starring the same person.
I did.
And opening on the same day.
I actually went back again to even go see the Reba do it.
Yep.
Yeah, the Tom Wopat was in that one.
Yes, he was. And that was directed by Graciela Danielle.
Yeah.
And it's written by Dorothy Fields and Herbert Fields. This time it was updated by Peter Stone. They got rid of the politically incorrect songs. I'm an Indian too.
Yes.
And I'm a bad, bad man. They were gone.
Yes.
Yep. In 2002, and I saw this in Chicago, I think before it got to New York, Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphosis. Just an amazing piece. Has anybody seen that?
I think I remember you going. I think I remember you seeing it.
I wasn't here yet. I was in Chicago. We did not know each other in 2002.
Are you sure? I feel like we met then.
I'm positive.
Soulmates. Always known each other.
So anyway, we might have known each other. But anyway, it's an amazing piece. It happens in a pool on stage. Mm-hmm. And it's has anybody seen it other than me? No. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. It was done here by somebody. Was it Zach?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think more than one company has
done
it.
So as well. In 2009, this is the death anniversary of Horton Foote, who of course wrote The
really?
Trip to Bountiful Pippin.
Yes. I have to find that poster.
And then in 2016, and I do not remember this, and you're going to say, of course, you remember it, and you probably do. Carnegie Hall presented a large-scale revival of West Side Story at the Knockdown Center, which is a restored 50,000-square-foot factory in Queens.
Yeah, you went bonkers over this.
It had 50 people in a 200-person chorus. Skylar Astin starred as Tony, opposite Margan Hernandez.
You went nuts for it.
I must have, because I'm going nuts over reading it.
B, it's your perfect pitch love. Yeah, it's like a whole, yeah, yeah. Pitch perfect, whatever, sorry.
Skylar Astin.
Yeah. We did talk about that.
Okay.
But it is pretty cool.
Yep, it is. It is indeed. All right, so let's take a little break again, and then we will. I'm going to talk about a little more. I'm going to talk about more stuff, but let's take a break and listen to a little bit of The Goodbye Girl, shall we?
Yes.
Plant a radish, get a radish, never any doubt. That's why.
Okay, those of you who are theater aficionados know that Plant a Radish was not in The Goodbye Girl. That was from The Fantastics, which we're going to play again a little later. So we're going to skip the Goodbye Girl song. I want to go right into this. Some of the other items that I wanted to talk about theater in general for our last few minutes together. Company, this new production of Company starring Katrina Link.
Yes.
And one Patti LuPone.
I was like, and you left out the LuPone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not the hugest fan of Patti LuPone, as you know. But anyway, so that started previews.
She's watched me put earplugs in my ears when she sang. She was not too thrilled on that.
That didn't you go with me to see her and Mandy Patinkin together?
No, because Mandy's another one I can't listen to. Nails on a chalkboard.
Anyway, so it started previews. And speaking of previews, there's an article in the New York Times talking about previews and what changes during the preview section, previews during a Broadway show.
And how long the preview period is expanded and all that. Was that the article?
No, it depends on the show. They did talk about Spider-Man Short of the Dark, which I believe holds the record for 180 exactly. Preview performances. But no, the headline is, how much does a play change during previews? And having gone through it once myself on a Broadway show, and the amount of previews and the amount of work that goes through during that 2 or 3 week preview period, where you get new numbers, you get whole new scenes, cut whole new scenes. And I remember during Oh Brother, everybody's favorite song, big opening production number, they cut it. And we were like all crestfallen.
Well, that's what happened to Jekyll and Hyde, Bring On the Men.
Yep.
They cut Bring On the Men out and finally had to put it back on.
It happens a lot. And what's the fun thing about, and I know I've said this on the show before, but the one thing about going to watch previews, if you go into previews for a musical and suddenly the orchestra stops playing and it's just a keyboard, you know that that's a brand new song because they haven't even orchestrated it yet. So I don't know if they still do that, but back in the day when it took a little bit to get it orchestrated, that's what we did. But it's pretty amazing how much work goes through during these preview performances, because you have the rehearsals, which is in a closed room, and then once you get in front of a paid audience, you start getting a better idea of what works and what doesn't work, what gets a laugh, what doesn't get a laugh, what tugs at a heartstrings, and also inflection and things like this. All this kind of stuff can change, and it's just really interesting. And back when I did it, you were in previews up until opening day, and then the show was frozen. Now they freeze the show about a week before opening, and the critics come during that week prior to opening. And so that at opening, they don't have to rush home and write. They just press send.
Yeah.
You know, here in Austin in community theater, I feel like the shows evolve weekly until the absolute end.
Yeah, you'd be correct, and there are pros and cons to that.
Yeah,
there are some of us that aren't really crazy about that evolution during a run.
Well,
but you're correct.
I'm talking more about, like you talked about, emphasis in a line or something like that. Like nothing dramatically changes, but definitely
Terrence's new piece that new he characters. Just did it. Zach, they had a script literally 2.5-3 hours, a brand new script again and a new scene right before opening night. It was in previews. Terrence changed every single day.
Yep. All the time. So it's amazing. If you ever get the chance to work on a new piece, even in Austin or anywhere, I love it. So when we do a new piece at our theater, it is not locked until opening night. And I find it wonderful.
And if you want to keep hearing more and more from Lisa and this show and every other show at KOP, make sure that you hit the donate button on the website at www.koop.org.
Or you could dial 512-472-5667.
Yes.
There you go.
Or press if you'd like.
Yes.
I'm going to give you a chance to talk a little bit more just after we talk about a few more subjects, and we're going to like come right in for a major pledge
awesome.
Break. Is that okay?
Perfect. Yes.
Awesome. But definitely do dial 512-472-5667. What was the number, Bill?
512-472-5667.
That's excellent. You have a job. So the last thing I want to talk about is this article about artistic directors. Did you see that one?
And are they needed or not?
Are they needed or not?
I saw that one.
Very interesting article.
It came out, I think, right after we finished our show last week, like just later on that afternoon. I was like, ooh.
It's in the Chicago Tribune, and they talked about in the 80s where artistic directors came in and they built a season. The season was built around the theater season was built around a dynamic visionary, and that's what they felt they needed. Some of these artistic directors, and this isn't going to sound like a lot of money in the for-profit world, but these artistic directors are getting $500,000 a year and more for nonprofit theaters, which is a lot of money. So this article posits, do we need artistic directors anymore, when what you really need is a really good producer that knows how to produce a season. Plus, in the day and age where equity and inclusion is becoming more and more important, a artistic director, which has historically been not necessarily male but or straight, but definitely white, there's very few artistic directors of color. So you're not hearing those voices because we tend to program based on our own experiences. So this is just a very interesting article. So what if you need it? And a lot of times when these artistic directors leave, the board opts to not replace them or to replace them with two executives.
I was like, where they replace them with like committee. They talk examples of having three or two or additional voices.
They cited
voices.
Two examples, one which was a terrible mixture,
I was like, ooh, that
and
was
one
odd.
Which worked really, really well.
It was interesting, though, after reading that whole article, what I got from him, like, you can't really take a for or against. Like, it's really, there wasn't, like, a one side of the line of the article from what I got from it. I'm like, well, you raised this question, but where are you going with it? It was interesting. Yeah. It was interesting.
What I love that they brought up in the article, and it's written by Chris Jones of the Chicago Tribune, Houston got a little nod when they talked about Nina Vance.
I was about to say, the Nina Vance was
yeah.
in there.
So
she gets a V, definitely.
He was talking about artistic directors mostly being white, and they said mentioned Nina Vance, Zelda Fishlander, and Jones were all women. And then, of course, gay people have been at the forefront of theater forever, so... La la la.
It seems like the person that's really capable of contributing at that level is very rare. And that trying to find one for every theater is probably a bad idea. Maybe they should just be brought in for a year or something, but it doesn't really seem like you're going to find somebody that can really lead like that one individual for every place that might want one.
My theater has one.
I'll say a lot of theaters
probably
have
a good one.
Yeah.
So we're coming up to the end. So, Heather, let's take the last little 2 minutes before I say our last story and our goodbyes. When you call and you become a member of the radio station, we'll say this.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me.
So, pick up the phone, 512-472-5667.
Or go online to www.koop.org.
Wonderful. The last thing I want to talk about here on the radio show is Edward Watts, who I don't know him. You probably do know him. But he and his wife are opening a theater in, where is it? It's in Arkansas? Is it in Arkansas? Yes, Northeast Arkansas, called The Link. And I think it's great. So he and his wife live there. They were raising their kids there. They decided to open up a theater. Their inaugural show is The Fantastics.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Who here's done the Fantastics?
Never done it. Sorry.
Never done it. Heather, never done it. Bill?
I've seen it a few times.
Seen it, if you will, in New York?
No.
Here.
Austin.
Oh, Austin, yeah. The Jewish Rep did it not too long ago. I really would like to play the old actor.
I thought you've played. There's a few characters I've heard you say you
would play. Well, I've played Bellamy before.
Yes, I know, but I've heard you say a few you'd like to play.
Yeah, there's a lot I want to play.
That's exactly what I just thought. Don't saying, just say you want to play one.
I just
it's
keep
one
saying
one
it.
Woman show, The Fantastics by Lisa Shepps.
I'm going to do that.
Coming to you, 2020.
So the other thing that, and this one truly is the... Did you hear about the woman that left Beetlejuice, Sonia?
The cast member?
Sophia Ann Caruso left Beetlejuice because nobody liked her.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's very interesting article by Riedel. So, of course, you have to take that into account.
You take, but, yes, exactly.
But it's interesting. And then we also didn't get to talk about this, the show Blue Roses, which is a musical version of The Glass Menagerie.
Yes, but what would that be in Espanol?
Zoología de Cristal.
Thank you.
Or the Glass Meningery. Is that what Nick called
that's
it?
That's the other one. Nick called it that. Oh, Mayo. He's been on my mind.
Yeah. Oh, and Juliet is coming to North America. It's going to play Toronto.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes, that is very exciting.
Very exciting.
So, well, we've done it again. We've finished. While we switch over to our next show, which is Austin Monitor News, you can dial 512-472-5667 and make a pledge to your community radio station. There is no Backstage at Offstage today, so if you're listening on the podcast, that's going to be it. I'd like to thank our guests, all of our guests, for coming. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies and everybody else.
A jazz hand for everyone.
Jazz hands for everybody else. And then again, all this movement and gesticulating does not work on the radio.
Thank you for being here. And don't forget, dial 512-472-5667 and get your donations in.
Okay, we'll walk away with a message from our sponsor. See you.
Zeros and ones, and these digits so foundational and permanent. In the grass, the trees...